Hey, Truck Roy here. We're on the Riding Shotgun Show, and we have a guest on that I've been wanting to get back on for a long time. And to my listeners out there, I know it's been a while since I put a show up. I've fallen behind. I've had some good things happening in my own personal life that have really kept me very busy, and then we had the upgrades on Stormfront, and now I think everything's getting back on routine. But I'm very, very excited to have my first show coming back after a little break with Horace from the Fall of the White Rabbit shows. And if you look at my signature on my post on Stormfront, you'll see my link to the Horace the White Rabbit shows. It's the best show out there, in my opinion, to my taste, on white nationalism, because it entertains me and it educates me at the same time. Horace, good to have you back on, man.
It's good to be back on the Chuck Roy Show.
Yeah, now, I listened to your show, and at first, I know you're a student of Bob Whitaker, so I'm not surprised to hear some mantra stuff in there, but then, bam, I mean, it's like a whole universe that you've created out there. You got interesting characters, you got all kinds of terminology. It hooked me right in, and I think it's appealing to an awful lot of other folks out there right now. Let's go over a little bit of the terminology you have on this show. You start off, you go by the name of Horace. Now, who's Horace?
Horace the Avenger is me, of course.
Of course.
It comes out of ancient Egyptian mythology, basically. Horace the Avenger, of course, comes out and puts down Set.
Okay.
Set is, of course, the red hippopotamus.
Set.
And it's chaos.
Okay, yeah, I've heard Set is referred to as like Satan or the devil or something like that.
There you go. It comes out of ancient Egyptian mythology. You can look up Horus the Avenger. He's the son of Osiris. I came up with something different because if you want to do something different, well, you better start doing something different.
Yeah.
You know, we were trying to do something different to get out unique concepts and ideals to put these little white rabbits on a consistent message everywhere. And so you got to do something totally unique and something they've never heard before. And
well,
the objective.
If that was your calculated effect, it was very bright because, you know, for years I've known about Bob Whitaker. I've read some of his mantra, some of his thinking that he comes up with, and it is very simple, but it's tough for me to get my mind around at first. It requires you to think in a different way. You know, after years of reading Bob Whitaker's stuff, and I knew it was dead simple, and I just couldn't understand why I couldn't get my mind around it, and I finally realized that Bob isn't trying to tell me what to think. He's trying to give me a new way to think, and I think that your show is a great entryway into that sort of thinking because it already gets people a little bit out of their natural element. It appeals to their imagination and takes them into this world you've created with Horace. And then what are some of the other characters we have on here? It's called the White Rabbit Show. Who are the White Rabbits?
It's called Follow the White Rabbit. The indigenous white rabbits of Europe are, of course, white folks. They're white folks everywhere. They're the Indo-European tribes spread out across the top of the planet.
Right, right. White rabbits all over the top of the planet. And I hear you say we have the whole top of the planet and no home, no rabbit hole.
Yeah, we don't really have a home. No one's claimed us. We have all this land. We literally do have the whole top of the planet. We have from Russia to North America. We have Canada. We have, all of Europe. We have all these weapons, all this outrageous technology, but we don't have a home.
Right, right. Yeah,
no one wants us.
Right, right. And that's what white nationalism is about, is trying to find a home for white people because Africans have their own nations, Asians have their own nations, and as Bob Whitaker says, white nations for everyone. It seems like nobody has a problem giving us the old slow genocide treatment by flooding our nations with tons of non-Americans or non-British or whatever. And that is genocide, of course, and we're less than 10% of the world population. It doesn't really take that much immigration before we're in deep trouble. And that's the problem that we're all trying to address, but you address it in a different way. I mean, I get a feeling from your show, a tone from your show that is more positive, and it's forward-thinking, it's unique, you're seeing hope, you know. I see doom and gloom when I read Stormfront posts or hear about other people talking about the precarious situation that white rabbits are in. But you see a lot of hope out there. You see undercover lovers. What's an undercover lover?
That's someone that works for us that you don't know works for us yet.
Okay.
That's simply, in practical politics, that's simply a steely-eyed lone wolfer, but they're not doing anything. They're not breaking any laws. You know, they're a lone wolfer type rabbit, but they're working for us, but you don't know they're working for us.
Right, and these might be people in government or in high up in business, that sort of thing.
They're all over the place, right?
Right, right. And you know, I've last time I had Horace on my show, you know, I told my listeners, you know, he gets into some really out there stuff that I don't quite follow him all the way on. But I still listen to him, obviously. It's my favorite show out there. And if you have any interest in some of the interesting stuff you've been seeing on the History Channel or you've heard other people allude to in terms of some of the unknowns out there, some of the things that quite can't quite be explained, you know, Horace, you know, I've talked to you, Horace, as an individual, not just on your show, and you are a guy who has some pretty good skills at analyzing the world around you. And anybody who's listened to your show and listened to your take on the Russia situation or listened to your take on upcoming world events and on how politics and war is developing around the world will understand that you know what you're talking about. And if you're seeing stuff on the History Channel and you're seeing some of the unexplained things out there and you don't know why some of these big players are making the moves that they're playing, your show has some stuff that can enlighten and entertain the people on that.
Well, everything changes day by day, but the general trend right now, like, is for war with Iran. It's been a trend in place a long time. When I first mentioned it on the show, I got a couple emails. This was back in May or June or whatever, saying no way that would happen. Now, of course, those guys are emailing me saying, yeah, it looks like it's obvious.
Right.
Several different players that have historically went against the White Rabbits are now in a lot of trouble. And we have this problem. We have this very unique problem. We have rabbits that look like us that have no loyalty to us, and they have a lot of power over us. I call them pink rabbits. There's no really way to explain them. You know, in America, we have the so-called conservatives. They look like us. They have no loyalty to us. They have a tremendous amount of power over us. The Mike Huckabees. Mm. And we've got to isolate those. You isolate them with a consistent message. You isolate them with a mantra. You isolate them with our talking points. But you have to isolate the self-hating white baby boomers. They're all pink rabbits. You got to isolate them, move them out of the way.
And by self-hating white baby boomers, you know, you're talking about folks that are white, but they're apologizing for their race. They're wanting to help out, you know, the same people who are raping and beating and robbing them and so on and so forth, right?
Well, yes, but they're relatively easy to move out of the way with a consistent message. The real problem we have are the ones like in the Republican Party in power, like the John McCains, the Mike Huckabees. That's a great example for Americans. They are extremely dangerous.
Right. Now, I want to talk about John McCain just for a second here, because there's a idea that you get across in one of your more recent shows that I really want to get to in a minute. But I was just talking to a guest who was over at my house last night. He's a white nationalist, a really good, guy who's successful in the community and everything. And I was talking to him about, your show, actually. I was talking about some of the points you make on there. And you have a little analogy, as you have so many great metaphors and analogies for some of these problems and issues out there. Tell me who the Lone Ranger and Tonto is. Tell me about Lone Ranger and Tonto.
Well, Lone Ranger has to have his Tonto. These self-hating white baby boomers, they have to have their little Tontos. They have to have their little brown immigrants. They have to have their little brown people to follow them. You know, just like Lone Ranger has to have Tonto. Tonto is supposed to follow him. Tonto is supposed to take his orders. The problem with Tonto is, as soon as Tonto has enough numbers, Tonto elects a Tonto.
For the listeners out there, because I know there's a lot of young listeners who have never even seen Lone Ranger or heard of Tonto, and I'm on the border there. I mean, I know who you're talking about, although I've never seen the show. So what we're talking about here, the Lone Ranger was old Western show where he was a ranger, and then he had his little Indian buddy Tonto who was like his helper, right?
There you go. He was a white cowboy, an all-American cowboy in war. You know, he was like a superhero cowboy, but he had to have his little Indian helper, and his helper was supposed to just do that, take orders.
Right. And so when you're looking at John McCain, or you're looking at some of these big shots in the Democratic Party, they're wanting to have their little Tontos, their little Mexicans, their little blacks help get them elected. And you know, Bill Clinton, who's from Arkansas, where I'm living now, would say, "Oh, well, I'm the first black president," or whatever. But when you have Obama, then you don't have to have a white guy play a black guy anymore.
No, Obama's a game changer. Tonto didn't want to vote for Lone Ranger. He didn't want to vote for Hillary. They wanted to vote for Tonto.
Right. Tontos like Tontos.
There's a flaw in their thinking. There was a flaw in the thinking of the Republicans. Always have talked about getting the black vote. They're doing it again. They will never get the black vote. It's a flaw. This flaw has actually probably taken under Langlosphere. And that's one of the things actually going for us, believe it or not, because they're going to have to make big moves. The challenge that the people in charge face is not the challenge the listeners think. No, the challenge they face is there is now a big competitor for their so-called Western civilization. And that big competitor, when they're on their backs, is you're going to call tribunals and claim you outright or some combination thereof. That's what they're going to do. That's what this Russian-German-Italian axis is going to do, because you're a hot commodity. This white rabbit, no one's claimed it yet, and basically is up in the air.
Okay. I got to slow you down and stop you right there, man, because sure. You just said like a couple brilliant things there that I understand what you're saying, because I've heard your show many times. Let me break it down for the listeners just a little bit there. When he's talking about calling tribunals, all right, now this is a concept that never even entered my mind before I entered the fight, Follow the White Rabbit show, but I think it is possible. It might not seem like it right now, but as the political scene changes, you're talking about movers and shakers over in Russia who would not be afraid to call a tribunal on some of these Hebrews, as you call them, some of these pink rabbits that have been working against us and committing genocide against us, and they have qualified for those criminal charges under genocide and stuff, and under the right political conditions, you can get them in a tribunal, and then, as you put it, they're done. That is the way to do things by playing by the rules, right?
Let me tell you what they're afraid of. Let me define this for you. Most people listening to this think they know what ethnic cleansing is. They do not know what ethnic cleansing is under international law. Ethnic cleansing is rendering an area ethnically homogenous by using force or intimidation to remove from a given area persons of another ethnic or religious group. And one other thing you're going to be playing with is Article 2 of Convention of the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. This is from 1948. It applies to anything after 1948. It does not apply to anything in the 15th or 17th or 18th century. And it defines genocide as any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnic, a racial, that's a genotype, or a religious group as such. A, killing members of the group. B, causing serious bodily or mentally harm to members of the group. C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life and calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Let me repeat part C. Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. Forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. They're nothing to play games with. And they will threaten the whole gamut against the people trying to run things against white rabbits, because you can't go in the directions they've went in. You just can't, walk down that road, and heaven forbid you don't run this whole planet one morning and you end up like Saddam Hussein.
Right. Right. Once Saddam Hussein is in that tribunal, he's done.
Yeah, there's no voting in a tribunal.
Right.
There are no social constructs under international law. Saddam Hussein can't say, you know, we're all Iraqis. The Kurds were just a social construct. I was just trying to get rid of them.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. That won't fly. You can't design social engineering with explicit intent to wipe out white rabbits. You can't go there because as soon as you get hit with an, I mean, as soon as you go on the record and saying we're going to get rid of these kids, and by the time Noel Ignatieff at Harvard says it, Noel Ignatieff talked about the genocide of the white race and all this type, white genocide. By the time he says it, it has to be articulated at a very high position. You got to really watch it, because if you go down and someone hits an ethnic cleansing charge somewhere, you might as well have killed every white rabbit on the planet. That's what Saddam Hussein faced.
Right.
And when you start talking about different parties in Europe, oh my God, it's just ruthless, ruthless stuff.
Right,
that's,
right.
That's what they're worried about. Now that's the tip of the iceberg. There's probably 7 or 10 of these going on for different areas for this group. This group has a lot of problems.
Right. And this group includes folks like Noel Ignatieff, Jews and other people who are just working for our destruction.
It includes, in my opinion, the whole entire leadership of Anglosphere structure in certain parts of Western civilization. There's social engineering programs, which are designed around white genocide. They are designed explicitly. It's a clear and consistent targeting under international law. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans and saying, oh, we're going to, several hundred years ago, the Zulus wiped out the Hutus or whatever, so we're going to create a blended humanity in only Africa. No one's flooding China with non-Chinese and saying, you know what, in 300 BC, you wiped out the Ugar Empire, so we're going to create a blended humanity in only China. No one's flooding Turkey with non-Turks and saying, you know what, for 4 centuries you murdered, raped, killed, and genocided European Slavs, so we're going to create a blended humanity in only Turkey. Only white countries are doing this. Only white leaders are putting this stuff out there. Only white children are affected by this. It's genocide. It's a clear and consistent targeting. It's the clearest. What makes it so unique for the listeners is never in the history of the world have the Cherokees, the Apaches, and the Comanches, the chiefs of those tribes, tried to replace their own tribes and then giving those people affirmative action, special rights, and privileges over them. It's unprecedented for someone to try to replace you. And what has happened is there's now a new competitor that not only wants you, he wants the whole kit and caboodle.
All right. Who's that new competitor? Tell the listeners out there.
The new competitor is the German, Russian, Italian axis that's coming into focus. That's what the Pope's talking about. That's what's going on. And that's huge. You got German manufacturing with Russian natural resources. And, of course, the Italians are there with the Pope. And that is going to be a new competitor to Anglosphere. And that's what the problem has been. And they basically have them, in my opinion, over the barrel. Why? Because they can go European-only immigration. The next thing you know, you're going to have all these people out of Anglosphere, which they've shown no loyalty to the listeners. Why wouldn't you get on a plane and go there?
All right. Now, early in your shows, you talk a lot about Putin. And I found this intriguing, and I suggest that anybody who's tuning into the Fall of the White Rabbit shows start at the beginning. Now, if you find a show that doesn't appeal to you, whatever, you might want to skip forward a little bit. But really, you're going to have to start at the beginning to kind of follow some of the groundwork he lays for some of the later concepts he throws out there. But in the very beginning shows, you talked about Putin a lot, and I found it fascinating. Putin is a big, big player, even though he's not technically the president of Russia anymore. And you say that he does run a little bit of an ethnic conflict model. First of all, what's an ethnic conflict model, and what's Putin doing with it?
An ethnic conflict model is what you have in California right now. You have a classic model where you have all these Africans and you let in a bunch of Latinos. The Latinos go at it with Africans. And why these groups are going at it, power never transfers. The people, it insulates the elites. In Northern Ireland, you had the Scotch-Irish go at it with the Irish. The Catholics and the Protestants go at it. But why? They're busy fighting. Everything becomes stable in London. It's a flawed model. I don't like it. It's a heavily, heavily conflict. I generally speaking, I don't like conflict models at all.
Well, you're playing with fire, right? Because it can turn into something you can't control.
There you go. And the pink rabbits love conflict. That's all they do is conflict.
Right.
They love it. And so when you're talking about a mini ethnic conflict model, that means he can't control immigration across his borders. And so so basically what he's going to do is, you let the dog off the chain. They got these little skinheads running around and beating, doing whatever they want to do, depending on whether or not they get caught. And if they do get caught, the police may the police may really rough up the immigrants, or they may rough up the skinheads and the immigrants and both. You know, he's running an ethnic conflict model, and I go into this in one of the MP3s, a different analysis of it.
Is he running an ethnic conflict model?
Because he can't control immigration. He can't control the open border scene. He didn't make the call on that. Now, who gets to make that call? I don't know.
Who else is putting them? I mean, there are people who are not friends of Putin over there. I mean, there's people all over the world that are putting pressure on this guy, obviously. I mean, how's he managed to survive this? I mean, because he's got the United States, talking a lot of crap about him, especially with that latest Georgia conflict and everything. How has he managed to keep Russia afloat?
Well, one, he recognizes race is real on some level,
right.
And he's not selling out his base. And he has a big, big team. You know, these guys do not operate alone. He is operating a big, big team. He's operating a team that will stretch in Germany, and German soft power is something your listeners don't even know about, but it is epic. German soft power right now can run an insurgency in Cincinnati if they want it going. But you got basically, in my opinion, German soft power, and this is just my opinion, and the Kremlin, and that is a force that cannot be touched if they start moving together. And then you got the Italians. And they've been working behind the scenes together, gearing up for a German-Russian-Italian axis, because it's an obvious gift. It's an obvious replacement to Anglosphere. What they need are white rabbits. What they need is a higher birth rate, and they need more white rabbits. Guess where those would come from?
The United States, other parts of Anglosphere.
There you go. So now that right then, when you do something like that, when you gear that up and they can't stop it, because they went to war with Islam. They're too spread out around the world, and they're bankrupt. They're $100 trillion in the hole. He's not bankrupt. So he did it not alone. He may get credit for it, but he's got a big team, a team that you won't see. You can feel them, but you won't necessarily see them. And I don't even know how to pronounce his name correctly this morning. It's a little early. Medvedev, or however it's pronounced.
Yeah. That guy.
His sidekick, Medvedev or whatever it is. He is definitely part of the team. You know, I think they play that good cop, bad cop a little bit, but Putin has the looks of being in control, and he probably always will, but he has a big, big structure. And I go into how they came into power, in my opinion, and some other things like that. But he's going to end up being a very, very big deal. Why? Because he can be – once Anglosphere is on its back, once all the social engineering is on its back, and you're coming out of heavily demoralization, you know, you're not brainwashed so much anymore. They're starting to question things. He can come across Europe and basically be the savior of Europe, couldn't he?
Well, yeah, he could. I mean, and there's a lot of possibilities out there. You don't say anything is going to happen for 100% for sure, but you do point out some very interesting trends there. And, you know, like some of the listeners, maybe when you first listen to Follow the White Rabbit show, you might question some of these things he's saying. And I did at first. And then, you know, as you were talking about this German, Russian, Italian axis there, I watched after listening to your show the thing unfolded over the Opel car company over there in Germany, trying to pick up, I think, parts of Chrysler or something, and they were in association with a Russian investment firm, and I watched as they made a move there, and then as the Obama administration cut them. And it was interesting to unfold, and I don't see all the angles you do, but I see enough to see that you're on the right track there.
Well, it's been in the New York Times. The New York Times has talked about it now. It's been in the works a long, long time, but it's a natural access. It's a natural access. And the Italian car company, I believe it was Fiat, came in there and bought parts of Chrysler. They're now in Detroit. And so they're all involved on some level. But Putin is a big front man, and he's got a lot going for him in that. Because one, he's not insolvent. Two, he's got a lot of natural resources. Three, he's next door to Germany, and he speaks German. He thinks German thoughts.
Well, language is so important. I have a friend of mine who a person who shares politics with us, and he's actually taught his children to speak Gaelic, the Scottish Gaelic, as that's some of his ancestry. And, you know, it's interesting because I first questioned why he would do that. I mean, the children are bilingual. They speak English as well, you know, in their home. But I've come to the conclusion that language is so important that the sort of language you think, that you speak, the sort of concepts that you can think can actually influence your ability to understand the world around you. You know, if you speak English, you're going to have one sort of way of viewing the world. And if you speak, say, Gaelic, you're going to have another way. If you speak Mexicanized Spanish, you're going to have another way of thinking.
Yeah, I think that's true. Right now, I'm learning German, so that should tell you something. And I could speak it somewhat, but now I'm trying to become fluent, so that should tell you something. I think language is important. I don't know about Scots Gaelic, but what's funny about the English language is it may be confined to the third world and only third world someday.
Well, I don't know. That would be an interesting development. Now, when you're talking about Russia here, one quick question for you. What do you think Russia's relationship with Iran is right now?
Oh, Russia's relationship with Iran? Right now, they basically, Russia and China told them, went with the IAEA report or whatever it was, and told them that they signed on the report and told them that they had to be sanctioned or something. But the Chinese and the Russians will not agree to anything tough against them. They won't agree with anything tough enough to stop them. Who knows what they've sold them? Who knows what's there? You know, it's kind of like Afghanistan. Our problems in Afghanistan are supposedly all having to do with the Russian, German, Italian access. I don't know specifics, but they cause problems anywhere on the globe because he doesn't have to move. What we're doing is expending all this energy trying to control the world. He doesn't really have to do anything. All he has to do is give someone else something. All he has to do is keep us running, keep us moving.
Do you think that's what they're doing? I've heard that Osama bin Laden long ago. I mean, this is around, you know, right after 9/11. He talked about his intent to wage economic war on the West by you know, exhausting us economically. And then just I think it was yesterday I saw Ron Paul talk about, say, even if we won, quote unquote, won Iraq or Afghanistan tomorrow, it would have been too expensive. Do you think that those wars over there or those occupations are bankrupting us?
Yes. They had to go to war with the Muslim world because we have our oil supplies there, and we have a dollar that's basically oil's priced in dollars.
So a petrodollar.
There. Yeah, we have a petrodollar, and we have a commodity based currency, but we don't have any commodities. We have a petrodollar. We don't have any petrol, so we had to be there. They went in there and tried to change Islam, and you know, two things rabbits don't like: they don't like someone trying to kill them, and they don't like someone trying to change them.
Right. And it hasn't really worked out that well. Now there's somebody else that has a lot of oil, and they might be willing to deal with us if we play nice with them. Who's that?
That's Russia.
Right.
Right, Russia has probably the second or maybe even the first, the largest oil supply. No one really knows because the Russians, you know, we cook our books one way when it comes to unemployment. They say unemployment is 10%. I guarantee you it's a lot higher. Russians generally play with their books when it comes to natural gas, when it comes to natural resources. No one really knows what they have because they don't tell you. But they got a lot. They got number two after Saudi Arabia. But we could have already hung pipelines. They offered to put tunnels underneath Siberia. The distance between Siberia and Alaska is nothing.
No.
On the map. They offered to pay for tunnels underneath there. They offered to pay for all kinds of stuff for us to deal with them. But the people in charge of the neocons, especially the pink rabbits, they cannot handle Russia. The idea of Russia and America coming together terrifies them. It just terrifies them. You know, they got to play divide and rule. They got to run the world or nothing at all. It's just it's their mentality.
Okay, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about the pink rabbits and their conflict model here. Why do they run conflict?
Well, I don't know. That's like saying the pink rabbit's art of conflict. Why do your white rabbit neighbors believe they're racist? Why did our ancestors think they were evil sinners for hundreds of years? I don't really have whys. I can only point out the obvious. They love conflict. They love anything that causes conflict, and they pretty much are good at it.
Mm-hmm.
They love fighting. They love antagonizing. They love harassing. Right now, there'll be a little pink rabbit on Stormfront. Right now, it'll be on Stormfront, hiding as someone else, instigating conflict. It's what they do. I don't know.
Right.
It's kind of like the moon comes out and they go into the little conflict mode once a month. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't have whys.
All right. Yeah, it is an inherent part of their nature. I think anybody who's run into a pink rabbit knows that there's something just eating in them that they have to start stuff up.
And you're talking about specifically by the, not all pink rabbits are Hebrews, but you're talking about the little Hebrew pink rabbits like the Abe Foxy Foxman from the ADL who has to fight. He's got to fight all the time.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, he tends to like conflict a little bit.
Yeah. Now, there's an economic advantage to conflict and the scarcity that it brings, though, right?
Well, sure. It's a vicious model, and it's the model that in my opinion, the planet's been under for about 3,600 years, and that model is now failing. I don't know if it's based on the sun, moon, and stars or what. I don't know why it's worked so well for them. But wherever you see scarcity, you're going to see conflict. Right now, if you're not bringing in a paycheck in your house, if you don't have a job, if there's some scarcity, there's going to be conflict, and they love that. They love that. There's several different control features that come out of it, but it's the model in general. If you go look at a corporate takeover, whoever has less scarce money, whoever has more money, whoever can get around scarcity is going to dominate the conflict. And there's actually a movie coming out called Avatar, A-V-A-T-A-R, and the movie's about us going to a foreign world. We go to the foreign world with this big multicultural, multiracial army because they have a scarce resource, and we got to take it over. It's a failed model. It's not a white rabbit model because we turn sand into silicone. We don't believe in scarcity.
Let's back up a couple thousand years, and let me throw out maybe a reason why this not that matters, but a reason why this model came into effect is that, early on before technological advancements, there was, not enough food to go around and so on and so forth. And in fact, in this world today, there's still not a lot of food to go around for a lot of the population. But something set the white rabbits apart from the other rabbits, and that was our ability to overcome that scarcity. And you made that apparent to me. I think I heard in one of your last shows a great line that I've been repeating to people, which is that most of the world is starving. They'd kill to have one of our chicken fried sandwiches or chicken fried steaks, and we're sitting watching chicken fried steak eating contests on TV. I love that. But it's true. And we overcame scarcity. Why have we done it and the other rabbits haven't? I mean... What?
Well, there's one simple reason, and most of your Stormfronters instinctively know this. It's because race is real. We have a little strand in our DNA. That strand in our DNA is connected to something we can't comprehend. But whatever it is, we overcome scarcity. We do abundance. We do abundance so much we can feed Africa. If you have a couple white rabbit farmers, they'll feed all of Africa from Zimbabwe. Once they come out, they all starve. We do abundance, and we do it. We've always done it. We've done it, and we do it bigger and better over the past so many hundreds of years. Especially in the past 50 years, it's become outrageous. But we do abundance. We get around scarcity. We always have. I don't have whys. You get into the deep essence of our DNA. The simple explanation is because race is real.
Right, and it goes farther than just being able to feed ourselves. Do you have a phrase you use on your show called the Godzilla or the Green Goddess? What do you mean by that?
Green Goddess is basically what I label our creative ability. She's our Emerald Girl. She's got her tail that can move side to side, but she can also breathe fire on you. She's all our creative ability that we can't really calculate. And most of the listeners have always taken it for granted. They're looking at an internet right now that is basically raw white rabbit creativity. They don't know how it came about. Most of them don't know all the stories behind it. I don't even know all the stories behind it, but it's there, and we just take it for granted as immediately as it shows up. But most of the world is starstruck by this stuff. You know, the Arabs, I remember growing up around Arabs, and they would consistently, Muslims, they would consistently ask me, they would say, Horace, why, what happened to you guys? Because at one time, their world was very wealthy, very, very powerful. And they said, you know, Europeans just one night just sparked, and you started doing all this crazy stuff, all the stuff you come up with, all the weapons and everything. And you
airplanes,
can't really explain it.
Airplanes, right. Internal combustion engines, nuclear bombs,
so on, so forth, etc. The list is just mind-numbing to the average rabbit in the world, except the white rabbit's just taken for granted. But I call that our Godzilla. We can't really explain it yet. We'll just call it Godzilla. There's just no explanation for it, but it's there. It's immovable.
Now, right, the internet in particular really changed. It threw the pink rabbits for a loop, didn't it?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, they were sitting ducks. They controlled the media, but what happens if a new media comes on that you can't control? Oh, no, they didn't even see it coming. They didn't see it coming until all their media companies were going bankrupt, and they still don't understand the effects.
Right.
And they couldn't do it. They've tried to regulate it because regulation is a form of taxation, and regulation and taxes create scarcity. That's how they do things. But they can't, they've never been able to do it up in, you know, even now there, it's not, it, we're not regulated here. We're able to speak freely. And so it's just given them fits ever since they first realized what it was doing.
What has it done? What has the internet, I mean, because the internet, as soon as it came up, you know, sites like Stormfront started popping up. It was almost like something that was waiting for an outlet. And what did that do to the mindset, or what is it doing to the mindset of the white rabbits here in America and in European nations?
What it's allowing us to do is communicate freely and control the energy flow. We're controlling the media now. We're controlling the new media. You want to control Fox News? Well, we don't control Fox News today, but we do control everything online. I mean, we own the net. We own the net. Stormfront, the hits the thing gets are just outrageous. Even the mundane site like VDare, the hits they get are just outrageous. The type of downloads yours truly got for the month of November, and I don't advertise. No one even knows about me, are just outrageous if you come out with something new for white rabbits. They're all starved for an outlet to speak. They're all starved for an outlet of someone speaking out for them. And what it did was it gave us a new medium, the internet, and we have dominated this energy. We've dominated this basically this pipeline, if you will.
How long do you think it'll be before this exposure to sites like Stormfront, the massive interest in it, has an effect on the culture in America?
Well, by the time there's two ways to overcome psychological warfare or brainwashing or active measures. There's two ways to overcome the pink rabbits and their psychological warfare. The one way is to take over their media, which was never done. Another way would be if a new media comes out and the new media totally destroys them. But once that new media comes out, it takes about 15 to 20 years, because that's how long it takes to get a new generation underneath the new media. And that's what's happened. That's what's been going on. So right now, it's starting to really, really take effect. How long does it take to brainwash a nation? Well, it takes 15 to 20 years, because that's how long it takes to put out the textbooks to educate the one generation in the ideology you want to educate them in.
Well, and stepping back and looking at, you know, the culture and the attitudes of Americans, say, over the past 100 years, you can clearly see that we have been brainwashed by all of those movies, all of that television, all of those textbooks, all of those academics that hate white rabbits. We've definitely seen that happen, because you could go back 100 years ago, and the average American, his attitude was definitely what would be considered to be radical racist today.
Oh, sure, sure. It, you know, anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white.
Right, right, because... Yeah, back then, whites were not ashamed. Actually, they were quite proud of their nation and their race.
Sure, sure. But what they've done is they've controlled this media, and they beat the living daylights out of them. The challenge is, for all the little white rabbits listening, is one simple challenge, and this is huge. This is epic. This is something most of the Stormfronters have missed. You're still white rabbits. They haven't changed you. All they've done is irritated you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Now, you know, when we think about this internet and what it's done to the media, it kind of makes me, you know, when you look at the media and there's only maybe just a handful of corporations that control almost all of the media, whether you're talking about newspapers or radio stations or television and movie studios. I mean, I think it's as few as 5 or 6 corporations control almost all of this. And what you have is an extreme bottleneck. I mean, even within the pool of reporters or anchors that do news programs and make opinions, you know, they're able to put out these litmus tests and they're able to bring in people that will only toe that party line. And, so it's a really, really tight bottleneck. It's scarcity, if you will. And the internet has just completely done away with scarcity, and that's something that we really just do time after time after time, is eliminate scarcity, isn't it?
Yes, we give them fits. We give them fits. We're the rabbit they can't control. We're the rabbit that gets out of the box and starts running. You can control an anthill forever. You can control beavers because they only build beaver dams. You cannot control white rabbits because you don't know what they're going to come up with. And once they come up with something, it doesn't matter whether it's the television or the internet. Once we come up with it, they have to spend all the resources in trying to control it. You know, we're not interested in controlling anything. We just want our own rabbit hole. We're very simple. They're very complicated. This has caused more and more problems. And their problems just mount by the hour, by the minute. But,
No, I agree 100%. You know, I mean, and that's something that's really come to my mind after listening to your show, and that's why, you know, that's why I encourage everybody to listen to your show, because it's an attitude that you won't get other places. It's an understanding that all is not lost. You know, it seems like everybody always thinks that all is lost. In fact, you touched on that on one of your shows recently. That's kind of something that we're always thinking that the end is near, aren't we?
Yeah, that's a white rabbit. That's a white rabbit fantasies. White rabbits are prone to fantasies. Your neighbors believe in they were evil sinners for hundreds of years. Your ancestors believe in that. Your neighbors believe in they're evil racists. These are all white rabbit fantasies. They're not true. There are positive and negative fantasies. Lord of the Rings, a positive fantasy, is a movie based on a positive fantasy. But All Hope is Lost is based on the fantasy that race is not real. We must be consistent in our thinking at all times. All hope is not lost, because you can get on a plane and go into Russian, German, Italian access in a day from now, be a citizen in an all-white country. That's what they're worried about. They're not worried about what you think they're worried about. They're worried about losing their gene pool, because if you lose a white rabbit, you lose everything.
Right, right. I mean, if North America lost its white rabbits, it would be a third world country. I mean, or third world countries, it would definitely go downhill very, very quickly. Now, personally, I don't want to leave North America. You know, I consider myself an American by blood, and although you know, I would never rule it out as a last ditch possibility. You know, this is where I'm going to, you know, stay and fight, and I think we can win it here. You know, I talked to white rabbits, if you will, in Europe, and a lot of them will tell me how, you know, or, you know, I've talked to Americans that are moving to Europe, and I say, why? I mean, we've got more Irish in America than they have in Ireland. In fact, we probably have about 4 times as many Irish in America as we have in Ireland. We've got as many Scandinavians in America and Canada as they have in Scandinavia. We have more Polish in Chicago than they have in Warsaw, Poland. There's an awful lot of Europeans over here in America, and I'm not quite ready to throw in the towel on America yet.
Oh, no. But what it does is, what I want your leaders to understand is, all these scenarios put pressure, because the whole entire world, everyone knows about white flight. You can wiki it in the Wikipedia. White flight is there. Asia flight's not there. Africa flight. White flight is there.
Right.
They envision these little white rabbits saying, screw Anglosphere. Anglosphere is America, the UK, and Australia. We're going to the white country. They envision that. They know you'll do that.
Yeah.
So if they really take you off. So, yeah, it creates a leverage. It creates a pressure point. All hope is not lost, because all else will never be equal. We're not equal.
No.
So how could all things be all equal? But this puts pressure on them. What happens if you wake up one morning thinking you have your planetary order, your new world order, and all of a sudden you have a new competitor for it? You have a new competitor, not only for that, but that can take your gene pool, and that you'll never have them back again. And who knows what they'll do to you then? Because if you don't have white rabbits on this planet, you don't have a whole lot of power.
No, you don't. And as you mentioned, power is slipping away from these pink rabbits here. They need the scarcity. They need these bottlenecks. They need these control points. And we just, like water going around a dam, seem to find our way around these control points. And how does this play out in conflicts on the national level, on wars and so on and so forth? Because I heard you talking in one of your shows recently how most white nationalists think that we're really good at wars. You know, they'll look at Nazi Germany and they'll say, boy, you know, they were almost completely surrounded and yet they, you know, their kill ratio was very, very good. They had a lot of technology. These guys were great warriors. What is it about us that makes us excel in war?
Well, there's a certain contradiction with the white rabbits. We are not conflict-oriented. If the white rabbit were conflict-oriented, most of European royalty would have been killed off 1,000 years ago. If the white rabbits were conflict-oriented, the Vikings would have taken over the world. When a Viking-style gene pool in the United Kingdom, Her Majesty, basically the crown, the royal family of England, took over the whole world with the redcoats. So if you get the pink rabbit banksters and the elitesters behind a big Aryan rabbit army, they'll take over the world. They did it. They did it underneath the British imperialism. But by and large, we are not conflict-oriented. We are defensive. It means 80-90% of our survival is based on defense. It's not based on birth rates. We are not birth-centric. We're not Africans. We enter into a unique combination. We are not conflict-oriented at all. We go away from conflict, which means the reason we've excelled at conflict in so many areas is because we dominate scarcity. We don't do scarcity. We do abundance. We have the new technology. We have the new gadgets and gizmos. I mean, white rabbits are sitting across the whole top of the planet. The rest of the world is saying, let me in. 90% of the world plus is sitting out there in these little hell holes, and we're sitting across the whole top of the planet surrounded by all this outrageous technology, and they don't have any land. They don't have we have all the big watering holes. We have all the vast majority of water on this planet. 10% has all that, and we do it through technology. We do it because we dominate scarcity. If we did conflict well, we wouldn't have immigration problems.
Right. If we were aggressive and we sought out conflict, I don't think we'd be sitting here watching blacks commit outrageous levels of crime and stuff. But we always have had the potential to solve these problems. Our ability to produce is just outrageous. And as you said, create. I mean, this is something, another point that I got from your show, was that, you know, it makes us completely unpredictable. You can put white people under pressure. You can put them in a tough situation, and you have no idea what they're going to come up with. You got a pretty good idea that whoever's putting them under pressure has got some trouble coming because we're tough to nail down, but you don't know which way we're going to go. You talked about, you know, if you take an African tribe over in Africa and you fast forward 1,000 years, you can pretty much predict basically what they're going to be doing. If you fast forward 100 years, you have no idea what we're going to be doing. We might be going to Mars or something.
Yeah, you don't know what the white rabbits are doing, because if you would have went back 50 years and predicted our future, you would have not had it. You would have been way off. The inventors of the internet, these guys that put the internet together in the defense industry, which all our creativity has been running down a defense path. Why? Our survival is based on defense, having a home, being able to shut the doors to outsiders. A typical type of behavior that we have to engage in. They basically denied us that. But what the guys from the internet did was they went on this elaborate thing on how big it would be. They were off by a mile. They couldn't have come close. And even the one that was laughed at, he was laughed at the most for being the most imaginative with how big this network thing would be, this internet. He was still off by a country mile. You cannot underestimate how real race is.
Right. And that's a huge plus for us. I mean, I thank God every day that I'm born white now, you know, and now that I understand things. But, you know, as a youth, I've told my listeners before, I was homeschooled and I lived up in a mountain in a rural area, and I had no idea about the world around me, and I thought that other rabbits were just same as us with different colors on them and such. And it took me a little bit of going to high school in a big city in Southern California and learning about race before I actually started to get these things through my head. And it took me a while. I mean, I got to tell you, when I was a teenager, at first I hung out with Mexicans a lot, and I tried to get to know these other people. There weren't too many blacks around, but you know, I just thought that they were interesting, that they weren't really, you know, I didn't see them as a threat immediately until I learned some lessons. It seems that we're not terribly ethnocentric naturally either.
No, we're not. We're dependent on one or two in a group to look out for us. You know, and that's really all you need. There's only in any given area, wherever a white rabbit is listening to me, there will only be one anti-racist working against you, one powerful anti-racist. We need one person working on our ethnic interests in every area, and that's basically it. One person on a consistent message is all it takes to even isolate that person. But we are not terribly ethnocentric. Everything's related to a few. Very few of us are good at physics, but it only takes one Nikola Tesla to set the world on fire. He's a big deal. T-E-S-L-A, Nikola Tesla. He's going to be a huge deal for white rabbits. But it only takes one of them. But our creativity is dependent on us being spread out and us being able to go with our creativity, us being able to develop it under a natural theme. And you must have someone sticking up for our ethnic interests, or obviously we get into problems we have now. But we were very easy to pin down for a variety of different reasons. One of them being we aren't ethnocentric and we're spread out over all these creative fields.
Well, that's true. We're a very diversified race, and I think that individualism, that ability for us to specialize, and you know, you can have Nikola Tesla, who you know may not have been good at digging ditches, but he was darn good at doing physics or whatever. I think that makes community all the more important for us, because we are so specialized, and everybody has their role to play. You know, I'm not gifted in algebra. I'm not gifted in a lot of areas, but there are some things that I do well, and so that's what I focus on. And every one of us out there has a role to play, even if it's the ditch digger. You know, this is a community is something that I always push in my shows. And I know that, you know, I've heard white people say, oh, that's black, you know, black work, or using the other word for black, or that's Mexican work, or whatever. That, in a white nationalist nation, there is no such thing as Mexican work. You know, white people play all the roles, from mowing lawns to building skyscrapers to, you know, cooking in the back of the restaurants. And I've been lucky enough to live in areas of the nation where white people still do all those tasks. I've had the rare experience these days of having being in a restaurant where everybody in the kitchen and everybody serving food and everybody was white. And it works. You know, white people are not above that work, and we shouldn't be. It's good, honest work. There's nothing wrong with blue-collar work. Hey, I've worked in kitchens before. I've washed dishes, so on and so forth. So there's nothing wrong with that, and in fact, it's vital that all of us play our role. And if you're not a physics major, if you're a construction worker, be proud of it. You know, that was something that I'm not incredibly – go ahead.
Well, I would just say that all those work are essential. If you're doing something, it's because, you know, we need you doing it. The only thing I want you doing is on a consistent message consistently all the time. And if you go to whiterabbitradio.net, that's whiterabbitradio.net, you're going to have things like the mantra. It's very important for you to understand that. Very simple. You can play it over and over again and understand it. Everything there is free, the talking points. Being able to defend yourself. If you could just defend yourself from being called a racist by saying, in your opinion, I'm a racist, you're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Don't argue with them. Just make your point over and over again. If you could just learn that alone, I would be very happy. It doesn't matter if you're a garbage man or whatever. It doesn't matter what the white rabbit is doing, whether you're out at an office or out on the beat being a cop. You have to start sticking up for yourself ethnically. It has to start internally.
And it can be done legally with words. And this is the thing I love about Bob Whitaker's mantra, and you use it consistently, and I've been using it, is that it's something that you can use and not get fired from your job. It's something that you can use in Germany and not get thrown in jail for speech crime or thought crime. It's something that you can use everywhere, whether you're a construction worker on a job site or you're an office worker in the lunchroom. And you give further tips on how to use this when you talk about the political correctness officer. A minute ago, you referred to that usually there's only one anti-white enforcing that political correctness in any given area. And if you can attack them and take them down, you can make a lot of headway.
Oh, sure. You isolate them with sound. You isolate them with a consistent message. There's two ways to isolate an enemy in any type of revolutionary environment. There's a, what you see. There's the traditional way, which means in a violent revolution, someone puts a barrel to their head or arrests them. Then there's another type of thing, and that's done with sound. It's done with a consistent message going over and over again. And that's what you do it. And that's how you do it. And that's what Bob Whitaker teaches. And that's what Follow the White Rabbit's all about, for you to learn to listen to defend yourself and to use basic talking points. And it's that simple.
Right. And, you know, I try to hit on the talking points myself. I'm not, you know, quite as creative as you are in your show. And I love your show because it's got so much creativity in it. But, you know, even on Stormfront, I'll get in an opposing views section. And, you know, I consistently just bring any argument back to the asking the person, are you in favor of white genocide? Because, you know, that's what it boils down to. If you're in favor of white genocide, then you're in favor of the policies that are out there. And if you're in favor of the policies that are out there, you're in favor of white genocide. And it, when you, Bob Whitaker, I think, and yourself repeatedly say, you've got to bring it back to that. As we talked about in the beginning of the show, this is genocide. Every other issue is kind of a side issue that it can lead you off onto paths that you don't need to go down. The only thing that you need to consistently bring it back to is, are you in favor of white genocide? If you're in favor of multiracial America, are you in favor of multiracial Africa? Do you want to fill Asia up with tons of millions of non-Asians? And you just repeatedly make that point. You know, it's not terribly exciting, except for that it's fun to watch people squirm. But, you know, it might not be as interesting as talking about, you know, black crime or anything like that. But it's really the only relevant point, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is the only relevant point. It's attempted genocide against you. Start defending yourself verbally. That's where it all begins. One of the challenges with these type of things is timing and having someone brilliant come out with the stuff. And timing is very important. We're 15 years out from the internet was invented a decade and a half ago, at least. It became mainstream and online. And so it's time. It's time. And this stuff works very, very well.
It does. It does. And you're right. It is time because Obama's our president. I think that's a big part of it. I mean, what more can we do, you know, as far as going down the multiracial path than have a mulatto as our president?
No, I don't think you can go any further.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing much more we can do for Africans other than make them president.
Right.
You've pretty much done the whole gamut. You know, Africans, you know, like I say in the show, Africans have 50-plus countries in the world. Africans have well over half the world's natural resources. Africans have the largest population in the world. They're the most numerous rabbits. Africans have the greatest piece of farmland the world has ever known, Africa. They live with us as a minority. I am a minority. There's not much more I can do for you other than make you president. We need to start talking about long-term solutions. And this isn't a solution.
No.
I mean, the country's $100 trillion in the hole and climbing fast.
Right, right. That is. And, I mean, that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. We're living in very interesting times. And I think I tell you what, man, I want trade living right now for any other time in history. As you mentioned, the potential we have as far as science and advancement is gigantic. And we're at a tipping point right now. And, you know, I've heard you say on your show, you didn't hear me 10 years ago because it wasn't time yet. And I believe that things are changing. They're changing socially. The whole world around us is in flux, and it's going to be fun to be along for the ride on this.
Yeah, I think it's the most interesting time in our racist history to live. We're at an interesting point, and we really don't know what has been, so we don't know what will be. But this is we are the rabbits of surprise, and I'd be ready for some surprises on all levels, because we can do it. We can do it. We've done it time and time again, and most of the listeners don't even know what we are doing behind the scenes. I know I don't, so it becomes rather interesting on what will be.
Well, yeah, and we are doing stuff behind the scenes. I mean, not you and I, but there are players out there in the government. I mean, Bob Whitaker himself. A lot of people may not even know who Bob Whitaker is. You know, Bob Whitaker was in the Reagan administration. He was in the CIA. He's mixed it up with the top of the top, and he knows what he's talking about. And if he can do it, And by the way, the Mossad hasn't taken him out. You know, I see this on Stormfront so many times. Oh, I'm afraid to do this because I don't want to get on a government list. Or, you know, we can't try to do a political action committee because the Mossad is spying on us. And, the, you know, come on, guys. I mean, our enemy is on their heels, as Horace has said here.
That's a glasses half empty look at it. I look at the glasses half full, and I found out that if someone puts you on an enemy list, someone's putting you on a buddy list.
Right. We got allies out there.
Yeah, you got all kinds of allies. You're the most precious commodity on the planet, and you right now are up for grabs. You might find one day in America they just start handing out jobs as policemen, firemen, or whatever just to keep you here.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting time. Well, we got to go, man. That's we're out of time, but I'm definitely –
It was good to be with you, Truck Roy, and that's whiterabbitradio.net.
All right, and Horace, I'm going to have you back on the show again very soon. I got to catch up. I've fallen behind on my shows, and I'm going to – you know, your show intrigues me, and I always am appreciative of your viewpoints on things, and so if you're willing, I'm definitely going to have you on a few more times.
Whenever you want me on, I'll be here.
All right. Talk to you later, man.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. To the listeners out there, I'll see you guys next week, and until then, walk tall, stay proud, and don't give them an inch.